meeting is now being recorded.
Good day, and welcome to the RDS Who Is To Review Team Plenary Meeting Number 6. Today is August 31st, 2017. Call is to begin at 11:06 UTC. In attendance today, we have Alan, Carlton, Catherine, Dimitri, Erica, Thomas. In the observer room, we have, Vingesh and Svetlana. Apologies today from Chris Despain, Lily, Sun, and Susan Kawaguchi. And from staff, we have Alice, Jean-Baptiste, Steve, myself, Brenda. This call is being recorded, and please remember to speak your name clearly for the transcript. Thank you, and I'll turn it over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much. It's Alan Greenberg speaking. We have a moderately packed agenda. I'm not sure we're going to meet our target of completing in 1 hour, but I will certainly complete in an hour and a half. The first item is the terms of reference, and we're trying to chip away at the sections here. And the first one that we're going to discuss today is the team member replacement removal. You'll recall that I was asked to, or I volunteered to draft something. I have no particular stake in what is there, but it's comparable to what I've seen in other groups. And I'll summarize the comments that people made. I may not catch all of them, but I think I'll catch the substance of them. There was only one comment on the first paragraph, that is the replacement of a new person. Carlton said he thought the board had to do the replacement. In fact, the selections for specific reviews with the new bylaws, as the actual selection is done by the chairs of the ACSSOs, and our practice is that if each ACNSO may designate three people that are essentially automatically taken. Any others, there is a discussion whether the AC or SO can have more than three people on the group, but the first three are taken without attempting to either balance diversities or make any other selection among them. So effectively, the ACNSO does designate most of the people on this group with no real discretion taken by the chairs, by the selectors. In previous rounds, the selectors were the depending on which review it was, either of the CEO, the president, the CEO, the chair of the board, or the chair of the GAC. But regardless, in all reviews that have happened since they started, regardless of who the selector was, if someone needs to be replaced for one reason or another, or named after the fact, then it is always done by the ACNSO without any intervention by the selectors. So I opted to, for the multiple reasons I just gave, to say that that seems to be a reasonable thing to do and to proceed with that in our case. So I hope there's not a lot of discussion there. This entire thing is not certainly the second part of removing people is not something that's likely to happen. And in all past reviews, including the SSR review that's ongoing right now, it has been the group has been silent on how to do this and just reacted as necessary if there was a case that arose. And we've been asked to fill in this section, but I really don't think we want to spend a large amount of time on debating it. So on the second section, there are several comments that perhaps the first threshold I mentioned should be raised. I presume it should not be higher than the second threshold, which was implied by one person, but that may have been an error. And the other, there was a comment of replacing the word fails in the middle of the second paragraph to refuses. grammar, I have no problem with that change. And the other question is, can we define disruptive? Do we have to put specific limits on it to make sure it's not being abused by the group? Now, I think it's highly unlikely we would ever try to exercise this. And in my opinion, disruptive is in the view of the beholder. And if enough people believe it's disruptive, then it is disruptive. But I'd like to open up the discussion. I'm quite happy just to delete the whole paragraph and say we will respond on an ad hoc basis if it is ever necessary. But I'd like to open the floor, and we have several people. Erica. Erica, go ahead, please.
Yeah. Sorry. Just forgot to unmute. Thank you, Alan. I'm fine in principle with the text. I'm even fine supporting like it is. I have no real substantial issue with it. But typically what is done, you would raise the threshold a little bit in number. So my recommendation was to include 70%, just to avoid, that you build up, you know, the potential negative blocks and against a particular person, which can happen sometimes. So I doubt it will happen in our group, but just to be on the fair side. And then I had on the first part, a tiner, I think you can call it a new member which joins, a replacement member, but maybe the word new member is better than replacement. Again, minor point, and whatever comes out, I'm happy to support.
Yeah, I have no worry. The only replacement new, I think in my mind, are synonymous, and if there's a preference for one or the other, that's fine. When you say 70%, I presume you mean both of the numbers 70%, because by only changing the first one, the second threshold is lower. Okay.
Correct. Totally right.
Yeah, the reason I put that as a lower threshold is that's only a request to the ACSO. We can't actually remove the ACSO agrees, then it's a done deal. But if it doesn't agree, it would be the higher threshold. But I honestly have no trouble increasing them both if that's the only difficulty people would have. Anyone else? Anyone would like to speak to the issue of disruptive or to the support simply taking the whole thing out?
Yes, Alan Falker speaking. I have no general objection against this this rule. However, I doubt that we'll ever use it. It seems to be over-designed, and for our group, it's probably not something that we actually need. I mean, we are a very small, select group of people, and I don't think there's much potential for disruption in this group. But I might be wrong, so...
I agree. I think the fact that this section was added to the terms of reference for us is questionable, but it was, and we were told that we have to fill it out, so we were trying to fill it out. At this point, I think the question is either we leave in the disruptive as it is with the 70% number changed and fails changing to refuses, or we delete it altogether. And as I said, I'm happy to go either way. Is there anyone who feels strongly it should be deleted or should be kept? Erica says she has no objection. Catherine says we should keep it in. Erica, no objection. Leave it in with the change. Okay, I think... for last call for comments, if at this point we will make the changes of replacement to new, fails to refuses with the appropriate grammar if necessary, change both thresholds to 70%. And I think I've caught all the changes and it stands. And Volker, I presume that is an old hand.
Yes, very old.
Okay. You're not that old. All right. Next item then. Next item is dependencies, and I'm going into this one cold, so I will ask someone on staff to put it on and make any comments well, I can make one or two comments. It's a long laundry list of the other things that are going on. I'm not aware of any that are missing, but if anyone is, please let us know. Other than that, I don't think it needs a lot of debate. The implication is that to the extent that things are essentially a done deal, and privacy proxy is one of them, implementation of ThickWhu is another one, we can certainly comment on it. Again, these are largely policy or starring recommendations that it's not clear we can affect. But to the extent this list is incomplete, we should add to it. And other than that, it's there for reference. Any further comments, either from staff or from team members? Catherine, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Alan. This is Catherine. I would just propose to add the GDPR mapping exercise, just for completeness sake, because that's another one we probably want to keep an eye on.
Good idea. Thank you. Erica.
I wonder whether we should add a paragraph, a short one, which would say that ICANN staff would alert us of any changes immediately which would occur to these points mentioned above.
I have no objection to it. I don't really see the need. I think that's what they're there for. Whether
yeah,
it's a
but it might not. I mean, there's so many things going on all the time. It's just an internal alert system. But again, if you think it's not needed, and if you fine with me.
What I'm saying is, I'm not sure a line in a terms of reference which gets filed makes a difference whether they do it or not. But I have no problem at all putting it in, so we can do that.
You're totally right. You're totally right. You never know if it's going to happen. I agree.
Volker, you
just
had your hand up. Volker, go ahead, please.
Yes, just because it came up this week during the RDS working group call, registration data directory services consistent labeling and display policy, which has recently been completed. I think it makes sense to also include work that has already completed, even though we would not be duplicating anything. That's currently ongoing. It's something that the community has recently made a decision on, and I think it might not be our place to critique the recent decisions of the community. I think when we go to older decisions, then it might be open for criticism at some point, but recently completed and ongoing, I think, should be the ones that we should be careful about commenting on. Thank you.
Adding it is fine, and I tend to agree with you. I think you were the one who made the comment on the RDS call also. And yes, I strongly agree that we should not be in the business of rethinking something where a group has recently spent a year or 2 years agonizing over the details, and this is the best they could work out. Yes, it may well warrant some changes. But we cannot keep on reopening issues continually that have just finally been closed. So I strongly support what you're saying. That's really a discussion for the scope, but certainly adding it as a dependency, I would agree. Any further comments? So we're going to add the items that were mentioned. We are going to add a short paragraph saying this list will be kept up to date, and we'll be alerted if there are any changes noted. And other than that, it's a done deal. Any negative comments or disagreement? Seeing none, hearing none, we have completed that item. The next item on our agenda is scope. And Lisa, who is not on the call with us, has tried to flesh out the scope document, and I'd like to go through it now. I largely agree, although I think one or two areas, there are some small things that I disagree with, and I don't know to what extent anyone else has had a chance to look at it in any great depth. I think we should go over from start and try to make sure that we're all agreeing. In at least one case, I don't agree with what it said we decided, and I'll raise that as we when we come to it. Okay, the first item is a bylaws mandate, and that is the review, the past review. I'm presuming there is no disagreement on that, and that is definitely within our scope and will be something that we do. Now, I should note that something being in scope does not mean that we are deciding to do it. We can decide not to, or we can decide to decide later in the process. But just so we understand what being in scope means. All right, the second item is the current effectiveness. Stephanie was going to come back to us with some words on how do we define effectiveness, because I am somewhat at a loss on how do we either quantify it or even qualify it. Since the RDS review team, the RDS PDP has spent an immense amount of time and not finished on trying to understand why do we have who is and what it is used for, I'm not quite sure how we comment on effectiveness. But Stephanie said she would come back with words, so I think we're going to defer that discussion. I will comment on the implication that the word effectiveness was referring to the law enforcement and other clauses. And what I'll read out the whole statement first. It says, the board shall cause a periodic review to assess effectiveness of the then-current GTLD registry directory service and whether its implementation meets the legitimate needs of law enforcement promoting consumer trust and safeguarding registrant data. And the proposal was, or the hypothesis was, that effectiveness refers to the implementation, whether implementation meets the effective needs of the three items. And I think if you remove the clause on the then current directory services, it becomes obvious that effectiveness was not modifying that. Because the sentence would read, the board shall cause a periodic review to assess the effectiveness of whether its implementation meets legitimate needs. And that's not, I don't know how you address the effectiveness of whether something meets needs, because essentially, there are two different things you're judging. So I think it's moderately clear that the term effectiveness is just describing we are to assess two major things, the effectiveness of it and whether its implementation meets legitimate needs and promoting consumer trust and safeguard data. So I'd like to come to closure on that and that we can agree. We're not dropping the whether it meets legitimate needs of law enforcement promoting or consumer trust. We're just saying the word effectiveness is not a modifier of that one. And that takes out some of the confusion because we don't know how to define effectiveness anyway. Erica, go ahead.
Alan, I agree with you. I think we had a parallel discussion, if I remember this right, where I argued it would be good to copy the practice from other internet company to install transparency procedures or to recommend like an organization as for supporting parties to install transparency procedure. This would help both on the side of to some degree saying that effectiveness doesn't become too broad and too big, because it would explain what actually is happening within a year, and it would as well show that there is no, hopefully, no requests coming from law enforcement which are cumbersome and problematic for the consumer side. So typically, these kind of transparency reports are quite helpful. So I think to indirectly, you might get some help for what you want to achieve from requesting such kind of transparency procedures.
Thank you, Erica. That was captured somewhere. It's not a scope issue, but I know I've seen it written somewhere, so we did capture it somewhere along the way. I don't think it's a scope. It may well be one of the recommendations we make. Volker, go ahead.
Yes, I'm just wondering, might be a slippery slope to ask that, but are we free to expand the definition of what the RDS is effective for, as in, is it effective in, as an example, protecting the privacy of registrants with all the mechanisms that are currently in use and in place, such as whose privacy as a choice? Is it effectively doing that as well? And maybe you want to add other questions where effectiveness might be relevant, other than those that are mentioned in the scope at this time.
Certainly, that's one way of looking at it, and that actually removes one of the later items that we have on evaluating the current RDS, and I'm not quite sure what the words we are used for current. Sorry, one second. Assess the value and timing of RDAT. No, I thought it was there somewhere, but certainly that is one definition of effectiveness that is. To the extent that we can identify specific needs which are not controversial, either because they are, I hate to say intuitively obvious because nothing in this business is, but to the extent something is mandated by law, for instance, then yes, we could certainly do that. I suspect the example you gave is already referenced in the safeguarding registrant data, so we may have a problem finding things that fit into that bucket. But I think that's certainly one way of doing it. Essentially we're saying on an ad hoc basis, can we find areas where it is not effective without trying to gauge effectiveness in all of its possible areas? Erica? Or is that an old hand? Why don't we go to Catherine?
Thanks, Alan. This is Catherine. I remember we had a conversation already about this and about whether the law enforcement, consumer confidence, and privacy are modifiers. And it was a way for that I suggested as an approach to try and sort of limit the scope of the effectiveness criterion, which I do think can be quite bound, borderless. In the meantime, I went back to the first WHOIS report and looked at how they did it there, because, of course, the first WHOIS review team was also struggling with the same issue of scope and what to do with effectiveness. And they indeed have done, as you suggest, and have put effectiveness as a separate item from whether or not the WHOIS serves the needs of law enforcement and consumers and privacy interests. So they have them as four separate points. And then they went back to the affirmation of commitments and basically distilled a couple further principles to help inform what the effectiveness might be used for. And I think we can maybe also learn from that. And they went through a public comment period on their scope of work where this was further refined. So maybe we can basically build on that in our own approach to this and then try and see whether we as a review team think that makes sense.
Thank you. I find that very useful. And I think we've exhausted the queue on this one. So I think we've decided that we will basically treat them as four different things, or effectiveness, and then evaluate the other three. And we are still waiting for Stephanie to come back with anything she has on defining effectiveness, but barring that, we will try to extract some words out of what Volker said or perhaps what Review Team 1 said, and to try to flesh out how we treat that word. Next item is current implementation and legitimate needs of. Oh, sorry, that's the. Essentially, that's what we've just been talking about. So those are really two issues that are. We will subdivide them differently to make them mutually exclusive. But those two are the sections we just talked about. Bylaw Section 3 is OECD, and we can someone remind me on where we are in that? The action says staff will produce some draft text for leadership to refine, reflecting OECD component and bylaws mandate. Where are we on that? Anyone from staff? I know Lisa's not on the call. Jean-Baptiste?
Yes, Alain. We were asked to provide some support document for this discussion, and we sent it to Catherine, who had to propose language on that.
All right. Catherine, what are your plans? To get something to us with for the next meeting, or are you withdrawing from your support on that?
there's two different. So my action is now listed under the GNSO scope. So row 5, and indeed I'm working on objectives, on a short formulation of objectives for the current implementation and legitimate needs of law enforcement for the section 46E II of the bylaws. And then for the OECD privacy and transporter data flow, the action that the ICANN staff has undertaken, I think, is completed because they circulated the text.
I think it was just circulated to you, perhaps, or to the leadership in you. Jean-Baptiste, can you confirm?
Concerning the OECD, I think it was circulated to everyone.
Oh, it was. Okay. Sorry.
No problem.
Okay. So that is not on Catherine's to-do list. But that document is for us to review.
The document on the legitimate needs of law enforcement, I think, was only sent to Catherine, but the one on OECD was definitely sent to the review team.
Yeah, okay, but that the one OECD one is the one we're talking about now.
Yeah.
So that is one that we have to discuss further. It is not on Catherine's list.
Right.
Okay, I haven't looked at that in detail. Has anyone looked at it and is in a position to start any discussion? My preference is to defer it until we've all had a chance to look at it carefully, and unfortunately I misunderstood that one and have not.
If you wish, we can put the text on screen if that helps.
If someone is willing to talk to it quickly, yes, certainly.
Okay, so the text is on the screen. So this was in response to one action item by the leadership team, and the following was offered for consideration, so I can read that out loud. So consistent with ICANN's missions and bylaws, section 4.6E3, the review team will consider the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD guidelines, on the protection of privacy and transporter flows of personal data as amended in 2013 by identifying examples of where today's RDS who is appears to be in conflict with OECD guidelines, b, examining steps currently being taken by ICANN to address who is compliant with related data protection laws, example given GDPR, and c, producing high-level recommendations focused on promoting RDS with compliance with existing and future data protection laws.
All right. Any comments? Erica, go ahead.
I have in principle no problem with the text, but I think we have to be aware that it's not saying much. The OECD guidelines are practically, there are no laws, they're just guidelines, and in many countries they are outdated by now, or they are much more, the way privacy laws are implemented is not really, these guidelines are not always capture the law. So I just, we have to be certain about the character of these guidelines. You don't want to give a wrong impression, and maybe we have to reread it just to be sure that we don't look naive and just referencing the guidelines.
Thank you, Erica. We have you with us, and I'm sure you will repeat that at the appropriate time. I will add that one of the mandates that we have, and it's a generic one for specific reviews, is we can recommend changes to the scope for future reviews, including changes to the bylaws. This particular one was added in without any debate by a single person. A lot of other people nodded their heads, but I don't think anyone looked at it to a great extent at the level that Erica has just described of just how appropriate is it for us to be looking at guidelines, number one, but they're not laws. They may or may not be supported by the constituent countries. And number two, something that is at this point effectively outdated. So we may well make a recommendation, or we could make a recommendation, that whole section be stricken and replaced with something else or not replaced as we wish. So just something to keep in mind as we go forward. One of our responsibilities is to make sure that the next review doesn't have to deal with problems which are not really applicable. Catherine, go ahead.
Thank you, Alan. This is Catherine. Just to say that also in light of what you were just saying about these being guidelines, not laws, and them being somewhat outdated, I'm not sure we're in a position to identify examples where today's RDS appears to be in conflict with those guidelines. I think for the items that are listed here, we probably need to be quite careful. And I think I remember the conversation focusing in particular on the idea that we would probably refrain from going into any details, such as providing specific examples of where we see conflicts, and rather just doing C, namely producing high-level recommendations focused on promoting compliance with data protection laws, which in a sense is what the OECD guidelines are aiming for. And since the mandate in the bylaws is quite unspecific, I don't think we should make our lives as difficult as is now set out here. We should really stay at the higher level and not go into the weeds on this one.
I would
wholeheartedly support Alan's idea of proposing that this is probably not the most useful thing to consider also for the further iterations of these review teams.
Thank you. If we change the word will at the end of the first line to may, does that satisfy you? That says we may choose not to do it. We may choose to do it in a slightly abbreviated form.
This is Catherine.
Catherine.
That would be one way. I'm just wondering whether we even need to do this because we're completely free in how we want to interpret this. It just says we should consider the guidelines in our assessment in the bylaws. So, why should we even say things such as that we're going to do a detailed analysis and identify examples?
Okay. Well, I didn't read detailed analysis in examples. In my mind, if we come up with two examples that we simply know are there, and we do, that would complete it. But I'm very happy to say we have considered it, and due to the fact that they are just guidelines, they are very outdated, we have decided that it is not worth our effort or ICANN's effort to address this issue in this review. I'm very happy to do that if the group agrees. Volker, go ahead.
I'm not trying to be disruptive here.
we now have a method on handling that.
Yes, I'm aware of that. If we proceed as you originally suggest by changing the will to a should or may, we are losing also the reference and the requirement to also look at current laws and regulations that flow from the OECD, even though the OECD guidelines may be outdated because they have been superseded by something else. The later text goes into the GDPR and related data protection laws that are related to the OECD guidelines. And as it stands, we're required to consider them. If we change it as you propose, then we can negate them. And I don't think that's the right way forward. We should maybe, rather than changing it as you suggest, add something to this, as in to say, or its successors or related laws and regulations that flow from these guidelines. So any successor protocols or regulations and laws should be considered as well. I think that would make more sense in the context of what's written here.
I would strongly disagree with that, so it's my turn to be disruptive. There were discussions within the Who Is review team that were related, essentially saying ICANN or a part of ICANN should evaluate and look at the laws of all applicable countries. Here it's a subset of applicable countries, it's OECD countries, and I think that is just something that we do not have the manpower to do, nor should we attempt to do a definitive study on whether specific laws are being followed or not. So I would strongly object to trying to put within our mandate an evaluation of whether the current Who Is meets specific laws in national laws. Erica, please.
I wonder if maybe I just read this text again, and I wonder what we actually want to achieve here. We want to say that ICANN's mission is consistent with the recommendation done by the OECD. And then the second point we are saying is identify examples of where today's RDS appears to be in conflict with OECD guidelines. And B, we are saying we are examining steps currently being taken by ICANN to address who is compliant with related data protection law. So these are super big goals. Are we really considering to do this? Are we really considering to examine or to consider to examine the, for example, the where the RDS is in conflict with OECD guidelines? I wonder if we just have to reframe it. Practically, what we want to say is that we base what we want to do to some degree on the OECD guidelines, being aware that in many ways various laws across the globe implemented the guidelines in a different way, or implemented the guidelines in a more, whatever. Do we need the rest that we really want to say we want to use it as a reference base?
Okay. Just to be clear, when Jean-Baptiste wrote, or whoever wrote that, said identifying examples, I think that was just examples, not the definitive list of all cases. So I think it's less of a major review than you're describing. But I think you're basically supporting Catherine's view that either we do this in a very minimalist way or provide the rationale for why we're not doing it at all. I think I'm hearing very similar things. And we can debate further whether which of those paths we take. but there's similar. Volker, whose hand is up again now, and I'll turn the floor over to him, is arguing that we do a much more intensive review, that is not just look at the OECD guidelines, but things that have been driven by the OECD guidelines or their follow-ons. Volker, go ahead.
Not necessarily. I think we should just consider the impact that her current WHOIS privacy has on, or that certain laws can have on that, if we are aware of them. I don't think we should go out of our way to identify every single privacy law in the world, but we should at least bear in mind that there are certain issues with WHOIS that have been pointed out by various organizations, none the least Article 29 Working Party and others, that current WHOIS is simply not working well to satisfy. And we should recognize that and maybe have some reference to that in our report, showing that we considered this. I'm not necessarily married to the OECD guidelines being in there or any specific law being mentioned. I'm just saying that we should be cognizant of the fact that current WHOIS has certain issues and with legal compliance that are currently not being addressed or are being addressed by ICANN staff at this time, and reference those.
Okay, so I think you're back on the minimalist side. That is, we don't ignore the issue altogether, but it's not an in-depth review. It's simply noting, and we can give a few examples if they are obvious, when there are issues that need to be, that ICANN needs to be cognizant of in going forward. Catherine, go ahead.
Yes, this is Catherine. Thank you, Alan. And just to say that I think Volker and Erica and I are actually not that far apart, because what Volker just suggested, namely, acknowledging that issues have been raised by other possibly more competent parties on the specific laws that they're in charge of, I think is a very useful and, in fact, essential thing for us to do, because we cannot fully ignore this issue in the report. What I'm just afraid of is that we should, on our own, set out to analyze examples and assess their compatibility or not with the OECD guidelines, because I think that's actually quite difficult to do given the somewhat vague nature of the OECD guidelines, which in and of themselves are addressed to governments and not to organizations that are implementing individual policies. So I would feel entirely comfortable if we acknowledge that others have raised issues and that probably, you know, that they have a point and that there are efforts ongoing to address these issues. It's just I don't feel comfortable for us to do the legal analysis that others have done or attempted to do.
I think we have coalesced on a single position. That is, the two options of ignore it completely has gone down to a relatively simple review, noting or comment, noting that there are issues. We can cite references to other groups who have more in-depth knowledge in the area, who have identified potential issues, and leave it at that. And add into that, also make a recommendation to drop it from the future, either drop it altogether or replace it if we have a suggested replacement in from the bylaws for future reviews. I think we have an agreement. Staff, is that captured? Is someone capturing that? I'm assuming yes. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is the one that says RDS, assess whether RDS efforts meet legitimate needs of law enforcement. That, in fact, is something the GNSO said, but we have now covered that under the second 4.6E2. And where the second and third line of this table is going to be rewritten to cover the two halves. So that's already covered there. And Catherine does have a to-do, an action item, to try to flesh out the law enforcement part of that. I'm a little concerned on the promoting consumer trust and safeguarding registrant, rather promoting consumer trust part, but because its words overlap significantly with the CCT review, but from a point of view of RDS, I think it's a different view, and I think we can come up with something there. Curiously, in my mind, those may directly overlap and conflict with privacy issues in that consumer, I may trust a website or a URL more by having information on it, whereas privacy implications may be I shouldn't have information on it. So that may be an interesting section to write, given that the future is changing under us. Volker, go right ahead.
Actually, I think you're right on this one. Personally, I do not trust a site that has Whose Privacy On with my business. But that doesn't mean I don't like Whose Privacy. I just think that whoever is doing that site and putting himself under Whose Privacy is making a bad call and probably foregoing a lot of business that they could be making. So I think consumer trust follows from Whose Data is a factor in consumer trust, not the only one, of course, but I think we have a role to play here, and the similar sounding work group review team, their work does not necessarily conflict with us. Where it does, we should just acknowledge their work, not duplicate their work, maybe stay informed of what they're doing at the same time, but where it's not conflicting, where it's not overlapping, then we have a role to play.
Yeah. Interestingly, it does go against what one of the earlier things you said, and that is the privacy proxy group recommended that we not attempt to identify a commercial organization. So there is no because of the perceived difficulty in recognizing a commercial organization from a women's shelter, which may have reasons for privacy, an organization that solicits money, and therefore their recommendations may well be at odds with what we're looking at here. And I think if we find such conflicts, we simply have to call them like they are and identify the issue. And we're not really in a position to make a change on it.
To comment on your remark there, I do not think there is a conflict or a different point of opinion there. I think we as registrars, registries, service providers should not differentiate between whatever entity is requesting Whose Privacy, but as a consumer, we may make that choice for ourselves. And it may actually help us to have that choice, to have that visible in the Whois, that there is nothing visible in the Whois when making that choice. So I'm separating my role as a registrar, registry here, from the role as a consumer.
We knock heads on occasion, but I agree on that one. All right. So I think... Sorry, that was really just going back to the previous item. So that item disappears in its own right and goes up to item 3 of the current list. Next one is assess how RDS current and future recommendations might be improved and better coordinated. And I think we already made a decision saying that's assessing future Whois is something that's directly overlapping with an ongoing decision process, and we are not going to include that one in our list. Volker, is that a new hand or an old hand?
The same old hand.
All right. So the GNS, the last item on the first page disappears. First item on the second page, assess compliance enforcement actions, structure and processes, availability of transparent data. I think we already decided that is within our scope, and we would likely do that to some extent. And the next one is assess the value and timing of RDAP as a replacement protocol. Given that we don't know what the functionality requirements will be for the replacement protocol, I don't think we can look at it from that perspective. We could certainly do an evaluation of whether RDAP is suitable to replace who is without any changes, logical changes to who is. We know it is. But overall, I object to this item being there at all because we are not experts in protocols. And RDAP was written by experts in protocols to replace who is and add additional functionality. And I'm not sure we have a real need to do that on our group and in within our scope. Dimitri, please go ahead.
I think that we should at least. I agree that RDAP is designed by specialists in protocol, but I think at least we should. Mentioned that it covers, well, I think all the known holes in Qwiz protocol, such as privacy, IDN, strict format, and so on and so forth. So, maybe we should not study it, but we should say that it's a good solution to implement. Thank you.
Any other thoughts on this? Again, if we're saying to implement it to replace the current who is, that's already actually in the contracts, that there are contracts that say should ICANN decide to go ahead with RDAP to replace who is, the registries and registrars will adapt to it. I believe that is something in the current versions of the contracts. I'm sure Volker can confirm or tell me I'm wrong. So I don't believe there's any need to do that because it's a decision that has already been taken. And to judge whether it is suitable for the future RDS, we don't know whether that RDS will have requirements that are not met by RDAP and will have to require RDAP enhancements. So I don't see how we can do that, but I'll go to Volker.
Thank you, Alan. Yes, as you maybe were aware that there's a certain amount of pushback from the contracted parties at this time against the plan to implement RDAP at this time. As you probably know, there has been an effort to implement RDAP prematurely, as we would say. Simply from our view, because the policy background is still not defined, and it would make more sense to implement it once that is done as well. So having to implement a protocol and then having to change a protocol from an economic perspective and from a perspective of an implementer is never very useful. We would rather implement it once the policy implications have been decided and we know what ultimately to implement, in which direction to implement it in our end, because it has to function with our systems. And if we implement it now and have to change something, we might have to do the entire thing over because it doesn't work anymore the way that we implemented it. That said, the timing of the implementation is part of our of what we're discussing as well. So we might be able to decide to say that yes, it should be implemented now, or yes, we should wait for the implementation until we know what actually will be the policy implications and how the exact implementation would look like once it's being used. So that's my main concern, that we when we look at RDAP, it's not, is it a replacement protocol? Yes, it is. Are we obliged to implement it at a certain point? Yes, we are. The big question is, when does it make sense to do so? And that's something that we can or we may want to or may not want to discuss during our group work.
Okay, but the point of what I was saying was that ICANN has already made the determination that it is suitable to replace the current protocol. It may be a lot of wasted effort, and given the number of things we have to do, why are we going to go through the motions of replacing it to do a job which the current protocol does adequately prior to us changing the policy? So I agree with you 100% on the on the position contracted parties are taken. I'm just saying we don't have to evaluate whether it's suitable. It's already, that has already been done, and that's part is done. And I don't see how we can evaluate whether it's suitable for the policy that is not yet written. I have no problem saying that we suggest that we not move to a new protocol until we have a new policy. But I think that's already a decision that it was effectively taken, but I may be wrong on that. In any case, I would strongly suggest that we not do anything more than what Volker is suggesting. Dimitri, would you want to get back in, or are you satisfied with that? Go ahead.
I agree with Volker's suggestions.
All right. Then we will capture staff. We'll capture that, and essentially we will evaluate whether it is whether RDAP should be implemented prior to a new policy being developed, which specifies exactly what the protocol, whatever the protocol is, will have to meet. Next item is one that Carlton suggested of assess whether the current protocol for current purposes is suitable. And I think the answer is yes, we can do that, but it is a really low effort one because it's trivial to find examples where it is not suitable, and we don't need to exhaustively identify all the reasons it may not be suitable. So I'm happy to keep that in with that understanding. We'll have to wordsmith the wording slightly, but I don't see any objection, any hands. And the last item is IDN, Carlton, and Dimitri, I think, have suggested that, and whether the current things are suitable, whether IDN is considered, certainly, again, that's in the same class, because IDN is, in fact, the simplest example of why the current protocol doesn't work or cannot work. So that one is within scope, but, again, a very minimalist effort on it. Are we done? I think we're done for today's review. We're at the hour, so I would not like to further this discussion in any case. But I think we are close to closure on the scope, so we'll need to get this. Yes, I'll go to you in a minute. We'll need to get this redrafted, but we may be close. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, excuse me, Alan. You were a bit fast on the item on compliance and the one about that Carlton raised. Could you confirm the decision reached or action item, please?
Compliance is within scope, and yeah. we didn't specify any more detail at this point.
Okay.
So we will look at compliance issues. To what extent we focus on them, we will have to decide as we go forward. And on Carlton's issue, we can include it, but it is, again, a very minimalist one because there are ready examples of why the current protocol is not suitable. But as we discussed on RDAP, we are not recommending a replacement just to fix those problems because there's a larger change coming down the road and it's foolish to duplicate.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay. Next item on our agenda is the fact sheet. This is a relatively quick one. This is a document that ICANN staff will be publishing quarterly on our report, on our progress. And I have one or two questions for the group on this. And this is comparable to the fact sheet that you've seen for other groups if you've looked at it. The only questions I have are, number one, if you look in the upper right-hand corner, it says we are expecting this review to take 12 months. I certainly went into this review expecting it to take a lot less than that. And do we want to leave that 12-month there or, in fact, set a target that's less? I open the floor. Volker, go ahead.
If you've watched Starship Enterprise Next Generation, you may remember Scotty, the engineer, that always overestimated and overperformed his time estimates of when something would be done. I think we should stick to the same and announce that we will need 12 months. And if we're faster than that, everybody will look at us and say what a good job they did. And if we overrun our own estimates, then we are still within the estimates that we've provided. So I think better estimate on the safe side and leave it at 12 months.
I will accept that, even though you have merged two different Star Trek series.
Sorry, I'm more of a Star Wars man.
Any other comments? So Volker is happy to leave it and then overperform. I guess my overall intent is to get confirmation from the people in this group that our target is not 12 months, but is less. But I'm fine with publicizing 12 months. I dearly hope this will not be a 12-month effort. All right. And the other item is, and it's not really a debate. I'm just curious, and I'd like to ask staff, the percentages of time that that the section at the bottom identifies as going into the various efforts. And I'm just mildly curious how those numbers came about. I would have thought the research and studies is a significantly larger amount than 20%, and the report gets written a lot quicker. Certainly, if I had drawn this up, I would have put a much larger part into that second item and much less into the draft reports. And I'm wondering if anyone has any input. Volker, is that a hand on this or a previous one?
It's a pathological problem I have of lowering my hand.
Well, I can stop calling on you if I see your hand. Is anyone on staff who handles this, or are these all people who aren't on the call right now? I can live with it, but I find the numbers rather anomalous. I don't know if anyone else does. Any other thoughts? Anyone care? No one cares enough. Let's just leave it be.
Hi, Alan.
Next time.
It's Jean-Baptiste. I will ask Charlotte if she can get back to you on that.
Okay, please. Thank you. Next agenda item is the agenda for the face-to-face meeting. I don't think we have enough time to talk about it here. It has been distributed. I would like to make a couple of comments, and if other people could think about it over our next 2 weeks. The important part of this agenda is making sure we have the right people there. The detailed day-to-day agenda, or, you know, within the day, we can, to a large extent, we can be flexible on and revise as we go forward. And there are a couple of things that that I think are missing from this. Number one is there's a good chance, as I'll talk about in a minute, the GDPR may be done there. I think we need a discussion sometime on future teleconferences and what we, on an ongoing basis, when they are held, how often they're held, and the length. We had tentatively decided on a schedule until the face-to-face, so I think we need an item for that. And my overall comment on it, looking at it, is I don't think there's enough value coming out of this meeting to justify the cost that's going into it. And part of that is due to the fact there is significant time allocated to the terms of reference and to the scope, and I think the scope we're almost finished on right now. So I think we're going to have to try to put more substance into this meeting, and unless people object to that, that's something I'll work on, that the leadership will work on with staff. I'm particularly concerned that although we're talking about subject matter experts, I only see one subject matter expert listed on this document, and that's Trang. So I guess I would like to focus more on implementation briefings than we are on the other things, but I'll open the floor for other people to comment. Short of having strong comments against that, then the Catherine, I, and Susan will work with staff and see if we can make some adjustments in this. And Catherine agrees with the substance. All right, then we'll work going forward on that. Quickly from staff, Do we know who is confirmed coming to the meeting, or better still, who is not coming to the meeting?
As far as I recall, and Brenda, please correct, I think only Thomas was not attending the meeting.
Okay.
I'm sorry, this is Thomas. Yeah, that's correct. That's
are you
the
likely?
Of my,
sorry, go ahead.
Pardon me?
Go ahead.
That's the beginning of my agency's fiscal year, and financially they aren't funding any travel for the first 2 weeks in October. That was when we were bantering back and forth with dates. That was why most of the dates I gave were in September. So unfortunately, I won't be able to attend.
So they're not funding travel, and you're not allowed to take ICANN funding for it?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Will you be participating remotely, though, to any extent?
Yes, I will. Yes, I will. I plan to.
Okay. All right. So we will have full attendance of this, but as far as we know right now, in terms of participation, whether even if it's not face-to-face. And I will tell you, chairing a meeting where one participant is remote and everyone else is in a room and can wave and make funny faces at you is a real challenge, but I'll do my best to make sure you get equal time.
I appreciate that, and I'm sorry to put that challenge before you.
No, but and I'll say right now, please call me on it if I'm not doing that. I've been the sole remote person on occasion, and I know what it's like.
Don't worry, I will.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
RDS PDP calls is the next item, and that was simply a comment that it may be useful for people on this in this group to participate occasionally, either while the calls are going, the RDS PDP calls are going on, or listen to them after the fact, just to get some idea of what they're going through. I will tell you that some of those calls end up being very productive, and other ones you wish you had something else to do in parallel. But if I could turn it over to staff and talk about the methods that you can do this on. Go on. I guess it's Jean-Baptiste who's the lone man standing here.
Yeah. Thank you, Alan. In fact, Lisa prepared those two slides for your review, which are currently projected. So it's basically some background information on the role of the PDP, on the who is PDP working group. And also on the second slide, Lisa has identified a few upcoming RDS PDP working group meetings, so each of them lasts 90 minutes, and also she highlighted the fact that there will be one happening on the second day of the FACE meeting in Brussels at 6 p.m. Local time. So this would be a possibility. If you're interested in joining as an active member or as a mailing list observer, there is a sign-up form that is available, and you can send the Word document field to the GNSO secretariat, who will confirm that you are registered and an active member. And you have to know that only working group members can participate in working group calls, and that recordings and transcripts are public and accessible to anyone.
Thank you. I'll note the second day is we are talking about having an informal dinner for those who are still available on the end of the second day, but the RDS meeting goes until 7:30 p.m., so it's not incompatible with doing an informal dinner and attending that meeting, should we choose to. Thank you very much. Next item is any other business. I didn't call for any other business at the beginning of the meeting, but I will, once we complete the two items I have, they're both very short. Or one of them is very short. I've been speaking with Teresa Swinehart on the GDPR briefing. The solicitation of input has just closed a few days ago, and her staff is busy analyzing the data, and she asked if we could defer this for a little while, and a little while translates to either our next teleconference, the one on the 28th, or the face-to-face meeting. And I said I didn't see much difference on one of them or the other. So we can expect by no later than the GDPR meeting, than the face-to-face meeting, probably. If there's some snag, I told her, we're looking for quality better than speed. So if there is some reason to defer it again for 2 weeks, that can certainly be done. But our target should be to get it done probably no later than the face-to-face meeting. So that's just an update on that. And I think she understands what it is we're looking for right now. We're not looking for a pat on the head and saying, don't worry, ICANN will look out for you. But we're looking for some specifics of what ICANN is doing and what their expectation is to come out of it. Lastly, and I see, Dimitri, your hand is up. I'll go to you in a moment. Lastly, I'll note there, the next meeting is on the 14th of September, and the one after that is on the 28th. And 2 days later, most of us get on planes to go to the face-to-face. And the question is, do we want to hold that meeting on the 28th? We don't need to make a decision today, but my inclination is to cancel that meeting. And I'm wondering if there's any input and thoughts on it. We can certainly do. I can do a poll on the mailing list. It doesn't have to be decided at this moment. Jean-Baptiste, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to raise that, I don't have the schedule of briefings yet, but there might be an opportunity to have a briefing schedule on that date. Just a heads up.
All right. Carlton said cancel. If you can give us some idea of that, that may be a reason to hold it.
Yeah. We are waiting for feedback on that, and as soon as we have the information, we will share it with you.
Okay, thank you. And I trust you'll also take into account my comments on my comments and Catherine's on the lack of real substance in the meeting. In the face-to-face, and perhaps that's an opportunity, if we can get the right people there, to look at some of the more controversial implementations or the more interesting ones. We have Dimitri and then Catherine, please.
Dmitry Iberevsky, for the record. Do we have plans to have face-to-face meeting during the ICANN 60 meeting?
No, I believe we decided we would not hold a face-to-face, given that we had had a face-to-face just 4 weeks before.
Okay.
So there is not going to be a face-to-face meeting. We still have an opportunity, if we thought we had anything to present, to give a public-facing meeting. But to be honest, I don't think we're far enough along to warrant that. If anyone differs, we can certainly still looking at that because the schedule is still being developed. But I don't believe we had intentions of holding a review team meeting there, and therefore people who are not otherwise at the meeting will not be are not being funded for it. Catherine, go ahead.
Thank you, Alan. This is Catherine. And actually, it's exactly what Dimitri was asking about, because I also have to make travel plans for ICANN 60. And I remembered our discussion concluding that we would not have a special official face-to-face meeting, but that there would be an informal meeting of the review team, if possible. And I also remember that we indeed did not think it was useful to have anything public-facing. But the informal meeting, I think, would be quite interesting to have, possibly even with remote participation for those who are not going to be traveling. And because the schedule is filling up so quickly, it would be really helpful to have an idea of when that might happen. Because I'm being asked about other sessions and whether I have preferences on timing, and it would be really good, because I do want to be there for our informal, it would be really good to have an idea of when that might happen.
Yeah. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you for reminding me. I had forgotten about that. I think it's a given that it is impossible to set up a session where there will not be conflicts. So within that scope, I guess it's a question for staff. Who will have responsibility for attempting to schedule it and trying to find the right slot? Does MSSI have its own set of sessions that it's scheduling, and therefore we'll do this one as well? And Jean-Baptiste, I guess it's you again that has to make up an answer.
I would have a few questions on that. So is it an informal meeting that you want to happen like in a meeting room or something more around like you would like to meet around lunchtime? It's just you know, like what we could do is to send out a doodle poll with different timings on the different days of the meeting, just to have a better idea on when most review team members would be available to meet.
Yeah, I suspect most review team members don't have a clue at this point because the rest of the schedule is not settled. My inclination would be to try to do it as a lunch meeting, not in a restaurant, but in a private room, if you have the budget for catering that, and hope that we can find one lunch hour where, or breakfast for that matter, where people could, where most people can be available. I think doing it outside of a food event is probably the only time, or outside of food, it makes it almost impossible for a significant number of people to be there. Even lunches and breakfasts are often scheduled, but I think there's more chance we can find one of those. So let's try. I'm not quite sure of the method. I don't think a doodle today will be very effective.
Understood.
But we can try to block out to one or two and then hope that each of our groups can allow it. And I'll talk to my scheduling people and see if they can try to keep an eye out for that. Catherine, go ahead.
Sorry, just to say, I think the lunch meeting is a really good idea. And I remember we already did a doodle on who's planning to attend ICANN 60. So we already know whether there is a need to organize remote participation or not for those who cannot come to Abu Dhabi. And I'm not sure that I remember that actually quite a lot of us were planning to be there anyway.
All right, then I'll ask staff to reconsider that. But if we do it in a meeting room, pretty much every room has remote participation. Thank you for that reminder. Anything else? Then not. Catherine, I assume that's an old hand. And it is. And we are at 23 minutes after the hour. We again have proven that it is likely to be impractical to have 60-minute meetings, but we are under the 90-minute mark, and I'll turn the next 6 or 7 minutes back to you to do as you wish. Thank you all for being here. It's a good meeting. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Alan.